So network components. Now, having understood the OSI model, so again, just to repeat, the 7 different OSI models. Please do not touch TU's pet alligator. So now let us look at the different network components and where do they function in the OSI model. So there are different network components. So the most popular ones are the routers, the switches that we see. So if you see, even in your home network, you would connect something called as a wireless router. Some people call it as the wireless access point, some people call it as the router. But then router, again, it's a device which is used to communicate between two different networks. And where does it work on? Which layer? Yes, you got it right. So it works on layer 3. So the different components are the network devices, the interface cards, the repeaters, the hubs, bridges, switches, routers, firewalls. So hubs and bridges are no longer used in the real life, but then it's good to know what a hub and a bridge does, right? So let us understand these components in more details. So we start with the switch. Now in terms of networking, so what is a switch? A switch basically is a device which is used to send data packets from one device to the another, which are part of the same network. So the switch in context of a networking is a high speed device that receives the incoming data packets and redirects them to a destination or on a local area. So it's really important. So where does this switch work on? It works on layer 2, correct, because it's part of the same network. So again, there are certain standards which are called as the Ethernet based standards, which are used for the switching terminology. So switch, just to remember, it's basically a device which is used to send or used to connect different devices together on a single network. I could have a lot of switches in my network. So switches typically come in configurations such as, say, a 4 port switch, a 8 port switch, a 24 port switch, a 48 port switch, right? So 48 port switch, as in I could connect 48 different machines or 48 different laptops to it through a physical connectivity. Or I could connect an access point onto a switch. So this is the wireless access point. And then I could have the different laptops or mobile phones connecting onto that access point. So switch basically is a device which is used to connect different workstations onto one physical device. Next is a router. So router, as I said, is again a most critical device. All the telecom operators use routers a lot because understand one thing. So the telecom operator deals with sending your information onto the internet or sending or connecting one office in one geographical location to another. So how is this done? It is done over a layer 3 and routers come into picture. So router is a device that analyzes the contents of the data packet which is transmitted within a network or to any other network. Routers determine whether the source and destination are on the common network or they are on different networks, so that they have to, you know, route the traffic or route the packet through the least cost or the destination which is closest to the end user. So that is the function of the router. So routers and switches, the most critical components in the network. So hubs. Hubs currently in the industry are no longer used because you have switches now. So earlier, when the networking started, so the hubs were used. So hubs is basically only one device can send information, and hub basically relays this information to everyone. But then in case of a switch, it could be from one particular user to another. So hubs are no longer used in the enterprise market, but then it's good to know what a hub was. So hub, as the name suggests, it sends data packet to all the devices in the network. So just imagine a situation. If there are, say, 48 users connected on a network, and if user A wants to say send some information, say user 1 wants to send some information to user 10, right? So what a hub would do is that, say, the user 1's data, it will broadcast or it will send to all the users, all the 48 users. Now this is just a very inefficient way of doing stuff, right? And this is possible only when one particular communication can happen at a time. So if, say, user 1 is communicating, then at that time user 2 cannot communicate. So it was a very inefficient method. So this this got eliminated by the use of switches. So switches help to eliminate this particular use case by saying that they work on something called as a MAC address. Now MAC address is the address or the physical address of a device, and say if there are two users on a particular network, say again that example 48 users. Now if user 1 wants to send traffic to user 10, then they could do it without affecting the other users. So it is not broadcasted as such. So that's the power of a switch. So network hubs, they are common connection for points for the network device which connects the different segments of a LAN together. So there were things called as the passive hubs. Now they serve as paths or conduits for data passing from one device or the other. So they don't have any intelligence. So yes, one more point. Hubs are basically dumb devices. So they don't understand where the communication has to flow between which two devices the communication has to flow. So they are dumb devices as such. So what they'll do is they'll take the information from the user and broadcast it to anywhere. So it's just like saying hello. So hello to everyone. But then it doesn't really make sense if that hello is not intended for you. Then there are something called as intelligent hubs. They allow the system admins to monitor the data passing through them and configure the port to determine which segments or which networks can be plugged into it. And then there are switching hubs. So these are hubs that actually read the attribute of each and every data. But then it's good to know what the hubs were, but then in current scenario, as I said, hubs are no longer used. What is a network interface device? So a network interface device is a device that connects or it serves as a demarcation point between a courier's local loop and the customer on-premise wiring. Wow, this looks complex, right? So okay, I'll simplify it a bit. So say for example there is internet. How does that internet come to your place? It gets terminated on a router, or I would say a wireless router, right? So you would have a TP-Link or a D-Link or you know any such device. So these are typically the routers. So earlier they were the DSLs where the phone lines used to get connected. Now they are the cable. Now the cable operators provide the local broadband which gets connected. So this particular device, it acts as a demarcation point. So that's a network interface device. This is where the data wires end at a customer's wiring closet. Phone companies are responsible for maintaining the wiring up of the network device, while the customers are responsible for wiring after this point. So the demarcation point, so say the service provider or your cable operator would say, I would give that Ethernet connection in your place, but then will you get your own router or do I need to provide you with that router? So that's the demarcation point. These devices are located outside the house, generally where it's a utility entrance, so it's called as the network interface unit. The network interface device are the gray telephone box. So now, as I said, these are replaced by the local broadband operators. So either you could use the telephone wires or the PSTN network, as it was called, the public switched telephone network. And now going forward, the PSTN is used, but then it is used only for calling. But then the internet can happen over a PSTN, but it could happen over a broadband as well. So these were the different components. So the key ones to remember are the routers and the switches. We didn't talk about the firewalls. The firewalls are something which act as the gatekeepers. So these are the security appliances for any network. They act as gatekeepers, as I said. We will have a deeper discussion around firewall, but then say any kind of policies, say for example something like a URL filtering policy. So URL filtering is say for example if you would want to block, I don't know, crickbus.com, correct? I don't know why would anyone want to do that, but then say for example your corporate network wants to block some things. Say you would want to block pornographic sites, or you would want to block trading applications, then you could use something called as a URL based filtering. So it's part of the firewall. Then there are some different attacks like the distributed denial of service attack or several different attacks. So they are part of the firewall functionality. So it's good to understand firewall at a high level, and we'll have a deeper discussion around that. So this brings us to the enterprise network. So we've looked at the OSI model, we've looked at the different network components. The key ones are the routers, switches, then the firewalls. So let us look at the typical networks. So you have two different networks. So one is LAN, which is a local area network. So local area network, basically it's layer 2, right? So we've said that if devices want to communicate to each other which are part of the same network, then it's called as a local area network. And then there is a wide area network, or the WAN. So as the name suggests, it's across geographical boundaries. So say if my office in Mumbai wants to communicate something to Delhi, it happens over the WAN, because I cannot have a switch which connects me from this place to Delhi, right? So I would need to have a device, which is that device, or a router in between, which helps my data from my switch. So switch gets connected to a router. A router then sends the traffic across the internet to another router in Delhi, and the Delhi gets connected to a switch, which is again layer 2. So see what I'm doing? I'm using the layer 3, and then I'm using a layer 2 which is in my local office. So local office is a LAN, and the broader internet, which is layer 3, is the WAN. So the other area networks, it could be, say, while LAN and WAN are highly popular, so there is also something called as a Wi-Fi based network. So it's called as a WLAN for that matter. It's wireless local area network. So it's just simple. It again operates on a layer 2, which is again restricted to the same network. And just in case where the laptops get physically connected onto a switch, you have an access point, or again a device which gets connected onto the switch, and this access point basically radiates the signals. And as a user, you can connect to that particular access point using something called as a SSID. So say for example you walk into a cafe coffee day outlet, so you see something called as CCD_free_Wi-Fi. So that is a SSID. It's called as a service set identifier. So you can connect onto that SSID, and the SSID gets radiated by that access point. So a Wi-Fi local area network is again part of the layer 2 or the local area network. Then there is something called as a MAN, a metropolitan area network. So just understand this. If it's a MAN is a bigger flavor of a LAN. So say if there is a smart city, right, there are millions and thousands of devices that need to connect to each other. Say a parking sensor to a water meter, to garbage collection sensors, to entire sewage systems, the smart lighting. Say for example everything needs to speak to each other. So for that I need a local area network which is superly expanded. So it's called as the metropolitan area network. Then there is a storage area network. So storage area network, I would not really categorize that as a network as such, but then it's a network of storages. So if I have different storage devices that I need to access, then probably I could connect them in a network, and that forms a part of the storage area network. So let us look at this particular diagram. So it's a real simple diagram that I have tried to put across. So you have some servers at the bottom that you can see. Then there are certain switches that I mentioned. So the servers can get connected onto the switches. So remember, these are the layer 2 switches because they are part of the same network. And then the layer 2 switches get connected to something called as aggregation switches. So these switches basically help to aggregate the different access switches together. These get connected to the layer 3 routers. So as I said, routers help to connect to the internet. So this is a very simplistic IT infrastructure that we can see. Now this seems a little complex. Now this is a tier 3 network in place. Now I'll explain it. So there are basically three different layers, and as I said, I was stressing a lot on the switching and the routing, right? So switching it happens through three different layers. So one is the access layer. So you could see that the desktops get connected to the access layer switches. The access layer switches are also connected to the wireless access points through which the laptops get connected. And there is something called as the IP phones. So these are again connected to the access switches. So access, as the name suggests, the users are connected to the access switches. Now imagine if I have a campus. each, or say I have a big building, and each floor, I have a building which is 10 floors. Each floor has got say 400 different users. So I would have different switches which could connect the different users. So these are the access switches. These access switches get connected to aggregation switch. So each floor would typically have one or two aggregation switches, and these aggregation switches will then get connected to the core switches. So this is the third layer. So you have the first layer, which is the access, the second layer, which is the distribution, and the third layer, which is the core. So distribution or aggregation, the name is the same. So these are the three layers of switching. On top of the core layer, you would have the firewall and the router. Now if you want to connect over the internet, you would have a router in place. So this is a three-tier network architecture. Now for small customers or medium customers, there is a two-tier network architecture. Now what happens is, you would obviously need an access layer, right? So users getting connected to access layer is something that you've understood now. But then what if I have a small setup? So then I don't need a distribution layer or a aggregation layer as such. I could directly have the access layer communicate to the core layer. So this is a collapsed core architecture, or the two-tier network architecture as it is called. Now this is a very good diagram to understand the overall IT infrastructure as such. So you have the access layer, you have the distribution or the aggregation layer, which is layer 2. Then you have the core layer, which is the core switches. Now these core switches get connected. So the things on the two sides that you see, one is a WAN router 1, one is a WAN router 2. So say if there are two different service providers, say there is Bharti Airtel, there is Vodafone, right? So they are providing you some kind of a private connectivity. These get terminated on the two different routers. Now on top of the core switch, you see something called as a firewall. So I mentioned that the firewalls are an important component from the security perspective. Now they are connected at the perimeter so that all the security policies, the URL filtering, the anti-spam, anti-malware, the anti-bots, the intrusion prevention, the DDoS, so everything can be taken care of. So they lie at the perimeter. So these are the firewalls. And on top of that, you see the internet firewalls. Sorry, the internet routers. So what you see in this particular network is that you have the three switching layers, the access, distribution, and the core. And then you have the firewalls in place, which is the security layer. And then you have the routers. Now there are two sets of routers here, right? So there are one set of routers which are meant for accessing the internet. And then there are another set of routers which are meant to have a private connectivity. So I spoke about the MPLS connectivity, so which is again a private connectivity which could be offered by the service providers. So say in the US you have people like AT&T, Verizon, which give you these kind of private connectivity. In the Indian market you have people like Tata Communications, you have Vodafone, you have Airtel, you have SIFI, which provide you this private connectivity. So these get terminated onto the two different WAN networks. So you've kind of got a gist of the enterprise IT that we've been discussing so far. So three major components: switch, router, and the firewall. So let us now spend some time to understand what are the different network designs. So the first network design that is that comes to my mind is the peer-to-peer networks. Now it's simple, right? And I'm sure you would have used a lot of peer-to-peer communication applications in your life, so, right? So what does a peer-to-peer network mean? So it does not have a dedicated server as such. So it's just a group of workstations that want to communicate to each other. So a simple case. So say if there are 10 different users who would want to play a game which is there on the local area, right? So how this happens is over a peer-to-peer communication. So all the workstations are equal, and anyone can take up the role of a client or a server. So it happens over one common network, which is a peer-to-peer network. The next is the server-based networks. Now these are the most popular form of the networks that you would see in the real life, right? So these include, say for example, client machines accessing the servers, there could be people who would want to access the emails, the web pages, the files, applications. So everything is a part of a server-based network as such. So a centralized server computer that stores the email, web pages, files or applications. So on a peer-to-peer network, all the computers tend to support the same functions. However, in a server-based network, so there's a server and then there are different clients. The server-based networks are more common in large and medium enterprise, as I said, and they're used everywhere, right? So you would have a server which would, say, typically host the application and you would want to access that. So that's part of a server-based network. So going forward now, let us look at some of the different network topologies that are in place. So say if I have to look at a layer 2 or I have to look at a switching infrastructure. Now, the way that the different switches can be connected to each other could be in the form of a star, that is one aggregation switch getting connected to, say, three different access switches. So this is a star for me. Or I could have a mesh network where each switch gets connected to each other. So if I have 1, 2, 3 switches and these three switches get connected to each other, then it forms a part of the mesh technology. So it could be a star, or it could be a ring, or it could be a mesh where each switch talks to each other. So typically a mesh is more expensive because the number of links that are required to connect to each and every machine or each and every switch is more as compared to a star or a ring. So then again, it depends upon the architect, or it depends upon the business priorities which are given to a enterprise architect to, you know, come up with a solution. So these are the different network topologies. I briefly spoke about MPLS, which is a multi-protocol label switching. So it's again end-to-end circuit technology. So just understand one thing: you can use internet to have a communication channel. So say if I want to communicate to someone in another part of the globe, I could use the internet. But then internet, it's very common, right? Everyone could access the internet. Now, why companies don't prefer sending their traffic over the internet is because of security. So people could actually look at the data streams. There are so many packet sniffing applications which could actually look at the data that you're sending. So then companies thought that, could I have a private communication myself? So say if I have to send traffic from India to USA, I would want this to happen over a secure link, right? So that's where the concept of MPLS came into picture. So you have the telecom service providers, say AT&T or Verizon. So they would have a global network in place. This is different from the internet. So they have their own private network through which this information can be sent from, say, India to USA. So this is a private network and it's called as the MPLS network. So the MPLS involves setting up a specific path for different packets. So because you have a private network, you can have a dedicated path as such. It provides a mechanism for forwarding packets from any network protocol. And originally it was developed in the late 90s to have faster packet switching. So it had the need from the security perspective and how it had to be forwarded from one part to the other. The next is VOIP, or it's called as a voice over internet protocol. Now it's really simple, right? So you have the MPLS to send the data traffic, then you can also have a VoIP network, or the voice over internet protocol, to send the voice traffic. So say sitting in India, if I would want to talk to someone who is based in USA, now I cannot use a normal MPLS network, but I need something called as a VOIP network, which resides on top of the MPLS network. So there is something called as the prioritization. Now what does this mean? So it's called as QoS, or prioritization. Now I know these are a little complex terms to understand, but then I'll make it simple for you. Say if I have to communicate, or I have to talk to my friend who is based in USA sitting out of India, then I would pick up a phone call and call him. Now if I have to use the MPLS as a medium, now again I want this as a secure communication channel. So then I would need something called as traffic prioritization in my network, so that the data gets separated from the voice. So it really doesn't matter if my first data packet, now believe me, I'm talking about data, right? So if I'm sending an email and it gets broken down into 5 different packets, so there's a proper sequence in which it reaches the end destination. So on the sender side, I have to prioritize that first my data has to go or first my voice packet has to go. So obviously my voice has a higher priority, right? Because if I have garbled data, so if say packet 1 reaches first and then followed by a data packet followed by a voice packet, then it really doesn't make sense. So I do something called as a prioritization of packets. So it is called as QoS, that is quality of service. So it gives the voice packets a higher priority than a data packet. So that is the whole crux of getting a VoIP network in place. So VoIP is the most common technology when you talk about telephone calls, and these are IP calls. So data is more secure and faster with private networks, but it costs much higher. So for the purpose of a communication system, so a low cost communication system, VoIP was introduced. But then in India, we have something called as a TRAI regulations, which prohibit you from doing voice calls. So it's like saying one thing. So say if I use voice calls to actually do something called as a toll bypass, which is not legally allowed by TRAI. So just keep a note of these terms. So there's something called as toll bypass and the TRAI guidelines, which are required for doing the VoIP implementation in place. So the VoIP technology provides a fast and high quality voice communication all across the world. So I spoke about that. So next is the internet and the office service. So there are basically three different types of application deployments over the internet. So first is the deployment of applications that the organization wishes to make to the external world. So basically there are, as I said, so not three types, so there are basically two types of deployments that you see. One is the intranet and the one is the extranet. So when we talk about communication or applications, so there are two terms involved. So one is the intranet. So intranet as in when everything is part of your common network or your one single network, then it talks about something called as the intranet. And what is the extranet? So extranet is when your application want to talk to another network, say over the internet or to another network, then it is an extranet. So lot of times when you're designing IT solutions, you would want to understand that where are your servers located. So are the servers or the application that are hosted are on the same network, or that is the intranet, or you have to access the applications over an extranet, that is the internet. So accordingly the access can be given. If there are many partners or vendors in place, they would have some extranet in place, so their own network which has to be connected to the corporate network, so that is extending the extranet. So different internet and office services, so it could include things like the file servers and the print servers. There is something called as a DNS, which is DNS basically it's a service which helps to resolve a normal say a URL. So say for example when you talk www.google.com, so this google.com is a unique resource locator, so it's a URL, right? But then this URL transform itself into a IP address. Now IP address is something that the server will understand, they will not understand the URL. So this particular mapping IP address to URL, it's a function of the DNS, that's the domain name services. Then there is a DHCP, that is the dynamic host configuration protocol. So this is basically used to allocate the IP address. So say if I have 10 different users in my network, it's a function of the DHCP to allocate the IP address to the users so that they can communicate to each other or to the internet. There are the directory services. It could be in the form of Windows directory or the AD directory, where the credentials or the username and the password get stored. There are web services, there could be email services, there could be policies that could be in place. So depending upon the user rights, I could have a lot of different user policies in place.